Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border. Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Again, the first Saturday in June. Seth Merrow in the studio. So, as always, thank you for joining us. Coming up a little bit later on today's show, Scott Shapiro from Churchill. You see Scott and Joe Kristofek with the paddock commentary down there at Churchill every day. And it's a nice stakes day down at Churchill this afternoon. So reached out to Scott to take a look at some of the stakes action and a closing weekend at Churchill. And again, if you weren't tuned in earlier or didn't catch the news yesterday, Churchill suspending racing, pending review of the situation down there with the horse fatalities they've had this spring. Next week, they will resume racing in Kentucky at Ellis. So again, we'll talk to Scott. As I say, I didn't call him to talk necessarily about the transition because he's the handicapper. He's not representative of the outfit. And when I talked to him yesterday, this hadn't all happened. And the plan is to talk about the stakes action with Scott, which we will do because it is a nice stakes card. So that'll come up in 15 minutes or so, 10 minutes or so. And then towards the end of the program, we will be joined by Tom Loot from the National Thoroughbred League. News came out a week and a half or so ago, and if you haven't seen it, kind of interesting. A group of players in the racing industry and players outside of the racing industry, the music industry and sports and whatnot, have come together with this league concept where currently there's going to be, I believe we'll start with 6 teams, but it's year one. They're going to plan to expand. They plan to have 6 events that will start in the fall this year where these team horses will match up, but they're going to tie it in with events, concerts and whatnot that hopefully bring some new people into the game. So I thought it'd be fun to kind of get a little overview of that idea from Tom, one of the folks behind the idea. So Tom Loot coming up a little bit later on as well. But I wanted to start things out going back to last night. If you were watching here on the network, we had the Thoroughbred action available here on the network, which allowed you to watch and wager on the big card annually down at Penn National, Penn Mile card, Penn Mile, Penn Oaks, a number of other stakes as well. But I thought we'd go back and take a look at the Mile and the Oaks. And we'll start things out with the stretch run in the Mile. The favorite at 2-5 was Major Dude, the number 2 horse, Irad Ortiz and Todd Pletcher. Coming off of a third-place finish, close-up third-place finish behind Web Slinger in the American Turf, which I would think flatters Web Slinger this afternoon in the race down at Churchill. Running second is going to be number 7 behind Enemy Lines. Behind Enemy Lines is going to have the lead late but get run down by Major Dude. Running third is Fletcher, who was trying turf for the first time. I thought Fletcher was maybe a little bit interesting. Fletcher went off at 98-1. And completes the trifecta. So as you can see, Major Dude gets it done. Chart margin winds up to be 3/4 of a length at 2-5. And behind Enemy Lines at 7-2 runs second. So you wound up with a $2.80 winner and a $6.20 exacta. But with the 98-1 shot running third, $108 triple. So the triple boosted up nicely. With again, Fletcher, it was a little bit of a leap to use Fletcher, perhaps, trying the turf. But Jim Lawrence, and of course, had shown a couple of races that were a little bit interesting. They elected to take the slot, was intriguing. And you looked up at the board and you saw almost 100-1 I could see throwing that one into the mix and playing around a little bit. Otherwise, it was logical with the first choice and the second choice running 1-2. Major Dude, as I say, came out of a win in the American, came out of a third, close-up third in the American turf last time. Tried the Jeff Ruby Stakes stake two races back and ran an okay second behind two Phils in the on the synthetic at Turfway. Two Phils, of course, went on to put in that nice performance in the Derby. Major Dude had won the Kitten's Joy, excuse me, three starts back down at Gulfstream. So it's a horse that had shown some ability as a three-year-old against some very nice three-year-olds like Two Phils. And on the turf was maybe a little bit better. Again, Two Phils, Jeff Ruby Stakes was on the synthetic, but the turf efforts certainly have turned out to be very nice. And in that subdivision, I like the three-year-olds on turf. I don't know whether anybody's totally jumped off the page, but Major Dude is starting to make a real name for himself. Behind Enemy Lines, the horse who is less than a length back, Jack Sisterston, a horse that started in Ireland, first United States start down at Gulfstream, was a win in the Cutler Bay, and then had run sixth in the American turf. Again, helping to flatter, you would think, Webslinger this afternoon down at Churchill. But that may be a nice little player in this subdivision as well, with now a couple of good efforts in three starts here since arriving in the United States. So first two certainly are horses you would think worth looking towards going forward in that three-year-old on the turf division. And you would have to think, you know, the winner being a Pletcher horse, you would have to think Major Dude is likely Hall of Fame up at Saratoga. Certainly think possible at the very least. In the Penn Oaks, it was a scratch-reduced field of only five. The favorite was the number nine Royalty Interest going out for Chad Brown and Klarovich off a good-looking debut win down at Tampa. Royalty Interest went off at 4-5 and winds up fifth in the field of five. Disappointing there. Irad Ortiz on board. Again, Royalty Interest, the big favorite, is the number nine in the back of the pack. The winner will wind up being Malimu. The three who you see there on the fence will hold off Metaphysical, the number six horse. 11-1, the second longest price on the board, over 6-1. Malimu for Jack Sisterson getting it done. Coming off a close-up fourth in an allowance event at Keeneland with a lifetime best buyer incrementally, but it just seemed like this horse had been moving perhaps number-wise in the right direction and managed to get it done yesterday. Trevor McCarthy on board again at 11-1, $24. Metaphysical, another one that overall, one win in eight starts, wasn't jumping off the page by any means, but certainly had thrown in some nice efforts to think should be considered a player and winds up running second. Again, the disappointment was the Chad Klarovich runner running fifth in the field of five. I'm not sure I'm looking at any of these as real exciting players going forward in the three-year-old Philly division. Be interesting to see. I didn't see what the numbers, I didn't see buyer figures for these races last night at Penn National. I looked earlier today and couldn't find anything. Interested to see what the numbers are. But as I say, on the three-year-old boy side, the Penn Mile, those top two finishers, I think, can be players in that division. The three-year-old Philly side coming out of the Penn Oaks, I'm not sure Malimu or Metaphysical are super exciting. And I will be intrigued to see another race from Royalty Interest because, again, the career debut down at Tampa kind of tabbed that one as a nice Philly, three-year-old Philly on the turf for potent connections of Chad and Klarovich. I have to think she was better than we saw yesterday. But, again, between the two races, the males and the females, the male version last night on the three-year-old turf side was clearly the better and I would think more predictive of horses we'll watch in stakes going forward. Do want to remind you that today it's a fan appreciation day at the Rome Branch grand opening. if you go out there, Fan Appreciation Day, always a little food, some vouchers, some past performances, and a contest. Should be a lot of fun. And I will be going out there as well. So Shannon from the marketing department will be out there a little bit earlier. Once I wrap up TV, I'm going to hop in the car and head out myself. So if you're out, a patron out in the Rome area, swing by the grand opening today of the Rome branch for our Fan Appreciation Day. We'd love to see you there so we can say thank you to you for your patronage. Mentioned it earlier just on the news and notes side of things. Churchill to move racing to Ellis Park. The Horsemen, Kentucky Horsemen's Association, subsequently put out a press release after this was announced by Churchill, and it doesn't sound like the Horsemen are particularly thrilled with the decision to move racing. And Anthony Mormino mentioned it on the show earlier. It's not, you know, Ellis is 2 hours away from Louisville, and so if you're based at Churchill and you have your horses boarded there and you're training there, it's not an easy move. And so the Horsemen are a little bit upset with the situation going forward. I don't really have an opinion, I guess, one way or the other than I think in this day and age, Churchill probably making the prudent move given what happened, but it seems like it's just, this is a blip on the radar. It doesn't seem like any of these, horse breakdowns were necessarily related in some way related to the track or protocols or whatnot. But they had a meeting, the HISA people and some track people, some veterinarians. There was a meeting a couple of days ago down at Churchill on you know, how to address this. And this is what they came up with, to suspend racing. And so that's the game plan here. And we'll see how Churchill then, hopefully news will come out as they look, take a closer look and try to come up with answers, if there are any, to the situation down there. But in the meantime, they'll be racing at Churchill today and tomorrow. And then next week they will go to Ellis Park. Just reading for the Racing Forum article, Churchill was scheduled to hold the Stephen Foster along with a strong supporting card of stakes. And today was kind of the Stephen Foster preview day, but Stephen Foster Day was scheduled for July 1st. That card will now be run at Ellis. So again, an unfortunate situation all around, going back to, you know, a few weeks ago down at Churchill when the horse situation took the turn that it did. And as I say, to me, it just, and I mentioned earlier, I'd have to talk to a statistician, but I think the potential is that these blips, these aberrations statistically, I think are just kind of inevitable over a big course of time. And it seems like maybe that's what it is, because we mentioned on the show before, Santa Anita had that, and they definitely made some changes, but Santa Anita is much, much better now and one of the safer tracks. And so maybe the protocols did make a difference. There was a situation in New York a few years ago like this, and they made some changes that certainly had a notable effect. So again, we'll see how it all works out. Hopefully for the best for everyone involved. But in the short term, we wrap up the spring meet today and tomorrow at Churchill, and then move on to Ellis next week. Earlier today, the Epsom Derby was held at Epsom in England, and the winner was August Rodin, getting it done. Career victory number 4 in career start number 6, and career Epsom Derby winner number 9 for Aidan O'Brien. So nice performance there from August Rodin. I'm just looking at the morning line. I have favorite on the morning line. I didn't see what the off odds were. I haven't looked at all the results and everything yet, but was the morning line favorite. So does get it done for Aidan O'Brien and headlines. Yeah, the ninth Epsom Derby for Aidan O'Brien. Incredible. All right, we will take a break. And when we come back, we will be joined by our friend Scott Shapiro from Churchill Downs. We'll take a little look at some of the stakes action today down at Churchill and more. All of that right after this. Stay tuned. It only takes one upset to make history, and now you can be part of Saratoga's long tradition at the Dark Horse Mercantile. The Dark Horse Mercantile offers a carefully curated selection of clothing, gifts, and home decor, from one-of-a-kind vintage racing memorabilia to select brands like Barber and Under Armour, as well as exclusive Dark Horse branded merchandise. So celebrate the Dark Horse in all of us at the Dark Horse Mercantile, downtown Saratoga, where the smart bet is always the Dark Horse. Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now. Welcome back to Racing Across America. Happy to be joined now, as we promised before the break, by our friend Scott Shapiro. You see Scott and Joe Christofek in the paddock before racing down at Churchill. And so I thought, hey, who better? Let's talk a little stakes action today down at Churchill. Scott, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Thanks for having me once again. Looking forward to a stakes-laden card here. Stephen Foster preview day, and getting to see a lot of horses run back from the Derby week, and some other ones, but should be a lot of fun today. Some real stars in action.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And just briefly, we were talking off the air. The news came out yesterday, Churchill today and tomorrow, and then next week things resume at Ellis with the suspension of racing. But you and I were talking, you and Joe will be in the paddock out at Ellis as well.
Yeah, we'll be covering Ellis from next week all the way through the end of the summer until Labor Day kicks and the circuit moves to Kentucky Downs. So I've never covered racing on a full-time basis at the P-Patch, so definitely looking forward to the coming months. Unfortunate situation, but we're definitely going to make the most of it.
And I've said it over the past few years, the racing at Ellis has really elevated. The two-year-old racing there in the summertime is a lot of fun, and so that Churchill is purchased and that you guys have that option, I think helps things out in a kind of a funny situation here, but we wish the best for everybody. But that said, I looked up last night before I kind of knew the news. I looked up the jockey and the trainer standings, and I was going to ask you, you know, thoughts on the human side of things a few weeks into the meet. But now we're looking at a weekend that may settle things. And I think Luis Saez, who has now planted himself down in Kentucky, looks very good to get the title, because after racing yesterday, he had a 9-win lead on Tyler Gaffleon, 28-19. So Saez just making a lot of waves down there. And then on the trainer side, the weekend is going to be a lot of fun, because it is a tight battle. Brad Cox, Dale Romans. Dale's having a great meet. Brendan Walsh having a great meet. And Steve Asmussen. Brad and Dale have 11. And Brendan Walsh and Steve Asmussen have 10. So the human side of things over the next couple of days, I think, is going to be a lot of fun, certainly on the trainer side.
Without question. And Luis Saez, I mean, what a difference maker he is. I couldn't be more impressed. Obviously, I've watched him for, you know, a number of years since he's been riding. He's gotten better and better. But I haven't got to see him quite as much as I have over the last 6 months to a year. He just is so good out of the gate. He gets horses out of the gate that struggle to break well under other riders. And he's not just an all-out send jockey, but he gets his horses in the position to where he can make his moves from there, whether that's on the front end, in a stalking position, or off the pace. But he's just been very impressive. It's not like he's winning with all favorites either. He's winning with 4-1, 5-1, 6-1. He's a tremendous difference maker, and he deserves the riding title for sure this spring. And then in terms of the trainers, you know, Brad Cox has been stuck at 11 for a while, hasn't had that many starters over the last couple of weeks, while Dale Romans has been absolutely smoke at hot, winning with just about everything he sends out. Martin Garcia has been the pilot on most of those runners. Brandon Walsh has had a solid run of it as well. Hasn't started a ton of runners since the hot start to the meet and the great Keeneland meet Brandon had, but it's going to be interesting to see how things shake out over the next couple of days.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Dale, of course, is a guy who lifetime wins down at Churchill is an incredible number, but he's having a really good meet, so it's going to be fun to watch over the next couple of days. But today is going to be a lot of fun to watch because, again, it is a stakes-laden card, and we'll kind of work our way back. We'll kick things off in the 10th this afternoon at Churchill. It's the Blame, a Grade 3 event, $225,000 up for grabs. I'm going to go with Pioneer of Medina. Off the last couple, I was a little bit leery, but I went back to the two races, the end of last year, the Harlan's Holiday and the Mineshaft, to start this year down at the fairgrounds. And I just think this horse is a little bit intriguing in here. Rattle and Roll, I liked last time in the Pimlico Special, and when he got the job done there, put in another triple digit, I said he has moved himself into the conversation amongst these handicap players this year. I'm just a little curious about, it's kind of a little bit of a quick turnaround for the McPeak runner. Santon is interesting to me, getting to the dirt. I think it's a fun race. What are your thoughts in the Blame?
Well, I echo your sentiments regarding the favorite, Rattle and Roll, who certainly is capable and the likeliest winner based on his best efforts, but this is his third start since April 22nd, shipped into Maryland, was all out to win the Pimlico Special at even money, and now is wheeled back very quickly now. He's never been worse than third in five starts over this racetrack, a mile and an eighth, right up his alley in my estimation, but at a relatively short price, I think he's a little bit vulnerable for the same reasons you do, Seth. I did give Pioneer Medina a long look. He's definitely an A for me, but in the end, I landed on Call Me Fast, who I think will be a legitimate price in here. And this is just a horse that's really taken a step forward, not only as a four-year-old, but since stretching out to further distances for Michael Pulich. He's raced four times this year, two firsts and a second in those four tries, and the lone off-the-board finish was a real troubled trip, went off slowly and encountering a ton of traffic issues in the Grade 3 Essex at Oaklawn. And Pulich took the blinkers off last time out in the Ben Ali, and he didn't beat Rattle and Roll that day when he was nearly 17-1, but he didn't have as good a trip. Brian Hernandez Jr. gave Rattle and Roll a really good ride that day. And I just think this is a gelding moving in the right direction, could be sitting on a career best effort, and could, I don't want to say get overlooked in the wagering, Seth, but he should be square price around 5-6-1.
Yeah, I looked at him and I got check marks next to some of the things you mentioned. I mean, he fires a lifetime best buyer last time just behind Rattle and Roll. Rattle and Roll gets the triple digit. He gets the 99 and a couple of nice workouts leading. I like it. I looked at that horse and I didn't quite pull a trigger, but I like it. All right, let's go back. Ninth race today, the Arlington Grade 3 event, mile and a 16th on the grass. I'm going to pull up a replay here. I liked Classic Causeway in the Essex. We're going to watch the Essex back at Oaklawn on March 18th. Classic Causeway is going to take them much of the way, but eventually Last Samurai, who had the great winner down there for Wayne Lucas, will go by. Classic Causeway winds up second. Subsequently in the Oaklawn Handicap, disappointed a little bit, but I found it intriguing that Kenny McPeak getting back to the grass. My concern, and my huge concern, is I think he needs the lead, and I'm not sure he's going to get it with Get Smokin', but I had to take a little pop with Classic Causeway. Set Piece is probably the horse to beat. Royal Patronage for Grand Motion is interesting. Your thoughts in the Arlington?
Yeah, I think, like you said, I think the pace should be honest in here with Get Smokin' along the inside with Classic Causeway. The scratch of Tiberius Mercurius maybe takes a little bit of the speed out of the race, but I don't necessarily think he was going to be on the lead. He might have been in a pressing position. Harlan Estate also showed some newfound speed last time out. And I do think that bodes well for Setpiece, who had a troubled trip third last time. Now, this is a 7-year-old gelding that certainly has created his own trouble, or at least is a horse that comes from the off the pace, so is likelier to encounter trouble than front-running types. But last time out, he was third, finished third in the opening verse, maybe would have gotten second. He had some real traffic issues in the lane. It was a slow-paced race. Annapolis won it. Churchtown was right there at the wire with Annapolis. And this is a horse now that should get a more honest pace than he got last time out off the bench. He's 4-for-7 over this turf course. And I think with a compact group and the outside draw, Ferran Cheru should, I say should, it might not happen, be able to keep him out of these traffic issues that have plagued him. He's had a really good career, but definitely could have won some more races with better trips. He's my top pick. I'm chalky in here, and I think Royal Patronage is the next likeliest winner, who ran a real big race, first start of the 4-year-old campaign for Graham Motion, career best effort, winning by a neck at Keeneland in a third-level allowance event. He has every right to move forward here, and he should get a nice stalking trip and get the jump on Setpiece.
Yeah, Setpiece, you know, you're always up against it when you come from out of the clouds, but I do think there's going to be enough pace to maybe set him up nicely. So, as I say, I like Classic Causeway, I'm taking the shot there, but we'll know about a furlong. Yeah, we'll know about a furlong in whether that's a good move or whether that duel takes place with Get Smoking. All right, the eighth race. I had pulled up the scratches here, and I'm a little bit disappointed because I like Pauline's Pearl here, so we can scratch the replay I had planned for Pauline's Pearl. That said, I'm maybe not that disappointed that she's out because I was using her. But off the last couple of races, without a lot of confidence, I was kind of trying to decide whether the marriage would continue or whether I'd sign divorce papers today. So maybe I now have a better look at this field. And so I move into Hidden Connection for Brett Calhoun off the close-up finish last time in the Double Dog Dare. It was behind Frost Point. I'm going to look for those two to flip-flop. And as I say all the time as handicappers, sometimes we try to get too smart and flip-flop prior finishes, and they come back in the same order. So we'll see how that works out for me. And I thought Idiomatic for Brad Cox was interesting. What do you see in the Shawnee?
Yeah, I think this should be a race. It was last year there was a big upset here, and Pauline Pearl, the mare that you mentioned, was 2-5 coming off the win in the La Troyenne, and she finished off the board in a 5-horse field at 2-5, just something to take note of. But I'm with you. I think the runners out of the Double Dog there are the ones, but I'm more chalky. I think Frost Point has really turned a corner and come into her own for trainer Bill Mott. She had those two big efforts to start off this three-race winning streak at the one-turn mile at Aqueduct. You thought maybe she was a one-turn horse or at her best at one turn after those, but she went to the Double Dog there, and I thought she was real impressive coming from last to first in that compact group, running down Hidden Connection, who ran about as good as she has maybe ever, but certainly in some time in that race. And now with, you know, Travel Column along the inside, stretching back out to two turns, who's been, you know, she doesn't seem to be the same horse, but I expect her to be the pace setter in here, should allow Hidden Connection to have a target instead of being on the lead. So I do give Hidden Connection an outside chance to spring the minor upset and turn the tables on Frost Point. But in the end, I just think Frost Point is really good right now, and I think she's going to handle this one and make it 4-for-4 and 6-of-12 now in her career.
Yeah, it comes in with a nice win streak. Like I say, I don't have any argument. I may be getting too cute trying to flip-flop the finishing positions there. But all right, seventh race this afternoon, the Audubon. These are 3-year-olds on the turf. It is a subdivision I like quite a bit, and I think last night's result in the Penn Mile may flatter my top pick. I couldn't get past Web Slinger off the latest effort. I think just maybe getting very good right now. That was a solid number, and again, maybe gets flattered by Major Dude with the win last night in the Penn Mile. Mendelssohn's March, I thought, could be a little bit intriguing for Ken McPeak. Might get overlooked over the finish in the American Turf, but I thought this one had some potential on Shearer. I'm looking at the scratches, and Shearer seems to still be in, so it looks like Pletcher may be elected here over New York for that one. But what are your thoughts in the Audubon?
Yeah, I'm going to get a little more creative here than I have in the last couple of stakes we've talked about, Seth. And while I respect the effort that Web Slinger put forth in the American Turf, where, he overcame a wide voyage throughout to get his head down and beat Farbridge and Major Dude, I do think it's tough to swallow the likely short price after him winning it over 22-1. Sharar, a little bit of a tough read, not knowing the form all that well in Dubai. But one thing I noticed, not very good out of the gate. Now, he does get Luis Saez in his first start in the States, so that should help. And the horse that he beat in One Nation last time at Dubai, February 24th, that horse is 2-for-9, and both of the wins have come at 7 furlongs, and that race is at 1.25 miles. So I've got some concerns if he's going to be around that 9-to-5 price. I do like Mendelssohn's March here quite a bit. I think the son of Mendelssohn still has a lot of room to show his stuff. Kenny McPeak talked earlier in the year that he thought he might have been his best chance at the Kentucky Derby. Obviously, that didn't pan out, but two impressive efforts to start the career, getting DQ'd, placed first in a maiden specialty at Fairgrounds on the turf, and then going to Oakland and winning over the sloppy going there. The Bluegrass was a little bit too much too quick, but he had an excuse in the American turf. He got bumped at the start and just never really was comfy along the inside in a little bit of a tough run race where there was a number of horses that didn't have ideal trips. I just think this colt should get a much better trip under Brian Hernandez Jr. today along the inside. I expect Desert Duke, who's a little bit dangerous on the front end of this spot and a horse that I'll utilize as a B-type, didn't make the lead last time out on the American turf, but when he did two back at Keeneland, he was very impressive winning for fun that day. But I think Mendelssohn's March will sit the pocket trip, and I think he's going to show his stuff here at 9-2 on the line for Kenny McPeak.
Yeah, I definitely think he's interesting for McPeak, Harold Lerner and company. All right, the Aristides. We talked about this. We did the handicapping show here on the network earlier, and we were talking about this race. Only 5 horses, but we're looking forward to it. $225,000 up for grabs. I'm always rooting for Bango and Greg Foley, fun that John Velasquez elects for the ride. But I went with Gunite. Asmussen over the past few years has become so proficient with the sprinters. And I went back and pulled up a replay from the King Cotton. Gunite's going to be the number 7 horse here and win pretty easily. And off of this, they said, we're going to the Mideast. And they put in a couple of good efforts on the trip overseas. But now Gunite comes back. I tilted slightly in that direction. Bango second, Sebelius third. I could have easily switched those up with equal confidence. I'm intrigued to see what your thoughts are.
Yeah, this is a fun race. Hard to believe this is a non-graded stakes because, you know, just for $225,000, because a quick glance or a more longer glance, and you could make the case this is a grade 2, grade 1 type field, even though it's just a compact group of 5. I could probably make a case for any of the horses, especially when you take price into account. But I did land on Bango, who just loves it here at Churchill Downs, looking for his 11th win here in 18 tries under the Twin Spires. And he seems to be as good as ever if you're basing it on his last performance in the St. Matthews when he popped the gate on Thurby and sat just off the early pace and then absolutely dominated that field of lesser competition. Now, lesser, but not a field of chopped liver. I mean, Surveillance, Miles Ahead, those are some pretty good horses in that field. He won this race last year against what I thought was a lighter bunch, so a solid group, and I think he can work out whatever trip he wants under Johnny V. But no doubt, Gunite has it in him to be, you know, the clear one to beat in this spot. He's never been off the board in 6 tries at Churchill. Reportedly has been working very well since returning from Dubai. And Sibelius, I mean, the one start he had here at Churchill came in the bet on Sunshine last year, and he lost by 3/4 of a length to Bango. With the inside draw, I wouldn't be surprised if Junior Alvarado gets aggressive. I mean, but even Tejano Twist and Strava, while maybe not going to get the right setup and maybe a little bit class challenge in this field, easily could win this race. They both performed well recently, and Strava loves it here at Churchill Downs. Fun race, even though it's just a compact group of 5.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, in a field of 5, every once in a while these come up. It's a field of 5, but really looking forward to it. And finally, the 5th race this afternoon, the Regret, 3-year-old fillies on the grass. I went with Papilio on top and pulled up a replay going back to the Appalachian on April 8th. Papilio is going to be the number 2 horse in here. Subsequently ran 4th in the Edgewood Derby weekend at Churchill, but I'm going to look for a rebound this afternoon. Mission of Joy from Graham Motion could be tough. Girl Named Charlie, I think, is interesting in here, given the trip last time. And if folks are looking for a price, I could make a case there. But what are your thoughts on the Regret?
Yeah, this is probably my strongest opinion. While it is a chalk or one of the chalks, I really like Mission of Joy quite a bit in here. She did finished third in the Grade 2 Edgewood, the same race, girl named Charlie Papilio and Sabalenka exit. And she finished third, beating just a length, Seth. But, man, I mean, she had some horse when they turned for home. Of course, Heavenly Sunday won that race in wire-to-wire fashion. But she encountered significant trouble at the top of the stretch and actually clipped heels, lost a few lengths, and then re-rallied again to be beaten just a length. And with Joelle Rosario aboard that day, she was a little further off the pace than I expect her to be in this mile and an eighth affair over the sod. I would look for Miss Riddler to be on the lead under Luby Saez. She's dangerous, but she looks like she's a little bit slow compared to her rivals in her third career start. I think Mission of Joy under Tyler Gaffalione is going to sit just off Miss Riddler and avoid the traffic issues that plagued her last time and get to the wire first.
Yeah, another fun race on the card. A fun race on a fun card of great stakes action down at Churchill. And we'll be tuned in this afternoon. Scott, we'll be watching you and Joe. Say hello to Joe for me. Wish you and everybody good luck this afternoon. And also good luck on the move over to Ellis. We'll be watching there as well. But we appreciate the visit this morning.
Always enjoy chatting, Seth. Thanks for having me. We'll make sure I say hi to Joe for you. And, yeah, we get started on the preview show here at 11:30 Eastern, and we kick off at 12:45, 11-race card. Should be a lot of fun today.
Excellent. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Seth.
Scott Shapiro from Churchill Downs. Nice stakes action this afternoon. All right, we'll take another break. When we come back, Tom Lute will join us again. He's part of the group that has put together this National Thoroughbred League. It sounds like a fun idea. We'll learn a little more about it right after this. Stay tuned.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player? To have a better knowledge of the game? To be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by Tom Lute from the National Thoroughbred League, an idea that came out and made news maybe a week or week and a half or so ago, and I thought we'd get Tom on to explain a little bit in more detail. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Happy to have you on because I think it's a fun idea. And as I've talked to people, they're interested to hear more about it. And some people aren't aware at all. And I thought it'd be a great opportunity to introduce people and for folks who have heard about it to give them a little more in depth. Before we do that, however, online, I've looked and seen your CV, your resume, but you have an extensive background in the horse racing game. For folks who aren't familiar, talk a little bit about the various positions you've held over the years.
Well, my biggest first step was running Vinery, a very nice, successful stallion and racing operation based in Lexington. Did that for quite a long time, and then owned by Germany, decided to get out of the business. I moved to California and ran Santa Anita Racetrack for 3 or 4 years. So, but during my time at Vinery, I learned, you know, probably more than anything because I served on the Racing Commission for 11 years, the Breeders' Cup Board for, I think, 10, and two of those years I was the chairman, but then running the racetrack and then buying racehorses and kind of done it all.
And that's an integral part of what you'll be involved in with the new league, because there are people from all walks of life, it seems like, involved. And so to have a horse person like you is, as I say, an integral part of it. But Let's start by just giving folks an overview. If folks aren't familiar with the National Thoroughbred League, what's the idea?
So a gentleman named Randall Lane, who's the chief editor of Forbes magazine there in New York City, partnered up with Bob Dougherty, a financial investor and educator from Southern California. And it came together just from the standpoint they're both passionate about life, business, and horses, and they were analyzing things well before my time and were questioning why there was never a league, as we see so many things now with any sport, the transfer of people, so people have a brand loyalty. And in horse racing, as we all know, successful horses retire pretty quickly. And so they explored the idea of creating more of a fan base based off of a team concept and competition. And that was the formation of the idea. I was brought in once, you know, they kind of formulated the corporation. And the idea is the franchisees, it's set up just like major sports. They modeled it after the NFL from the standpoint that the people that buy a team own that percentage of the league. So right now we're going to have it. We might be announcing shortly a seventh team for this first year, but right now we have six. So you're 1/6 owner of the league. And we're running it very much like those leagues. We're going to have our own bylaws and our own board meetings. And we're really trying to create the concept of taking horse racing one step closer to a fan experience unlike it's ever had in the past. So, you know, we're starting off on September 3rd with the race day, but it'll be that weekend, Labor Day, in Nashville. So there's a team called the Nashville team, and they'll have their horses, and we're going to run just within the race card of Kentucky Downs. So we're going to run two races there just because of the turf and the big field sizes. We didn't want to compromise racing. It's very important that people understand we're integrating our league within the current rules and regulations of horse racing. So we'll have two designated races at Kentucky Downs that day that will only be National Thoroughbred League horses, and that's the restriction. We put up our purses, but we let the horsemen get the handle. So we try to be very accommodating to the industry as we bring a new concept. And the idea and the model of the whole league is, number one, we're going to create festival-type weekends. They're very different thinking gentlemen. So I do have my challenges because, you know, our industry tends to say we want to think out of the box, but you get out of the box, nobody says they want to do that. So that's the battle. It's going to be a challenge this first year to kind of get our feet established and get the industry behind it. But we want to have a great weekend where we're trying to go after the new fans and a new experience. We're going to try to create a lot of entertainment during the day, and you have to be very careful and work within the racing compound of the, you know, of the facility. But the idea is great. I love it. It's going to be a lot of work. As you know, it's really difficult to work within our system, and we're going to move state to state. So a lot of work ahead of us, but I think if you look at the vision and you look at the overall, you know, mission, it's phenomenal. It's great for horse racing. They're trying to reach a new crowd and make it fun at the track. I mean, one of the things I've seen over the last 5 years or so, and it's been trending for a long time, but on-track attendance is dwindling. The experience on track is dwindling. And so we're hoping that people can get behind the name of the city. Oh, and, you know, God forbid we get lucky and have some great horses pop out of these leagues and develop a lot of media attention. And then one of the biggest things, and we really haven't talked a lot about it yet, but we're going to do a documentary series very similar to the golfers that saw, I think it's called, I forget what it's actually called now on Netflix, but something swing. They did it in tennis, and it's really successful in Formula One racing, called Drive to Survive. So we've contracted with some producers to do the filming. And one of the things I'm really excited about, unfortunately it takes a year to do this because we're going to spend a lot of money paying for all the filming, and then they'll go back and edit it in. But we can take in each episode a little bit of a, you know, obviously we'll have plenty of drama. It's our sports dream. But we can take a little bit of the time in these documentary episodes to talk about the real reason for the use of the whip. And probably most important to me, since I love to bet, is we can kind of create some educational information within these episodes about how to read the racing forms and the PPs and understand the process of betting. So a lot, got a lot to do. We're not expecting to change the world. And I think, you know, we've got plenty of naysayers, which is what lives in our industry. But give this thing 3 or 4 years and the investment they're making in horse racing, I think everybody will be proud.
Yeah, with social media these days, you can't get away without some naysayers. But I have said here, talking about it the last week or so, it's a new idea in racing. Let's embrace it. Let's see what happens and hope for the best. And I heard you on with Steve Bick the other morning. You were talking about, you know, you're looking out longer term. The first year, you'll work out the kinks and develop and go. And I pulled up your website, and we listed the website address, by the way, ntl.racing. People can check it out. Kick things off in Nashville, Kentucky Downs, and then on to Seattle, New Jersey, New York, which will be Meadowlands, Los Angeles. And then I love it, New Year's Eve, the league wraps up down at Tampa. I love Tampa to begin with. I think it's a fun track, but that's great. Last day of the year to wrap things up. But just talk a little bit about it, because I went to the website and I had the guys in the control room pull up a little of the video there. And I think if you look at the video, it kind of confirms this. It seems like you're trying to revitalize the on-track experience through this league concept, which will interest people to begin with. But then there'll be a lot of events tied in as well.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, that's the part that, as a degenerate horse guy, you know, it's new to me. But and people will see this evolve, and it's just so hard to do this in interviews. But Bob and Randall have got a vision that's really, to me, outstanding. Number one, we have an event team. We have a marketing team. We got more teams than I know what to do with. I told them that I said we might be staffed as well as the Breeders' Cup. And that's just all part of their long-term vision. And I'll give you an easy example. I think the Meadowlands experience is probably the – because we're still working all the details out. That's the hard part of a startup. But, like, the Meadowlands deal I think is going to be phenomenal. Randall Lane's tied in, and I apologize, I don't know the guy's name, but the guy that's in charge of the New York Food and Wine Festival, which is a big event that's going on, so we're running Saturday night at Meadowlands because we're going to have quite a few of those celebrity chefs at the track. Uh-huh. And that gets into your question. We're trying to do different things to bring people to the facility. So, you know, each city is going to have its own theme, but that one's going to be food and wine. And we think it'll be a great draw because, as we all love to eat, and we're going to have executive or celebrity chefs there, so there'll be all kinds of food tastings. And so that's the draw. I mean, you'll get food people that may not ever typically go to a racetrack. And that's part of the process that we need people to, and like you said, embrace and endorse and give it a chance. It's going to take time. But that event's going to bring a lot of foodies to the track that may never go to the track. And I make the joke about it. Even if they've got their back turned to the racetrack, we got them on the premises, we'll hook them eventually, and that's just all part of the growth pattern.
Yeah, I think that's a nice idea, and I also think it's a great idea, this season concept, because I've said, and I'll ask if you agree, one of the nice things about the Triple Crown that gets people so focused on it, it's horse racing's equivalent to other sports seasons. You have the two-year-olds, which is kind of the preseason in August and September and October maybe, and then there's kind of the early regular season, December and January. You get into the later season in February, the playoffs in March, and then you have the championship events in the Triple Crown races, and I think it's an easy season concept for people to grab onto. And so I'm curious if you think the same way and you think this league will have a similar type of effect of drawing people in to a season-long type of a schedule.
Yeah, it's a great point. I don't claim to be smart enough to know that, but I think from the perspective of we're having one event in a month in a city, we can become, and that's our hope, that when we go to Nashville, that becomes a weekend that people put on their radar, or if it's in the Meadowlands, or people want to go to L.A., and you know, you brought up Tampa just to give you the creativity of the team down there. They're the ones that talked us into New Year's Eve. We were going to do it earlier in December, and they really wanted us to, because it's our championship. We have a very elaborate point system, very similar to the FedEx golf system. And we have a point system, so whoever has the most points at the end of Tampa's races, and we're working with TVG or FanDuel Racing now on hopefully covering that for us as far as the accumulation of points. So championship day at Tampa, New Year's Eve, should be a great idea. It was their idea to move it to that weekend. They're embracing it. They love the idea, and we're hoping it really works out. And that, hopefully that, like you bring up, I mean, I don't know enough about how it'll all evolve. We'll make some changes, but we hope we could be a real impact one weekend a month in the cities we're in.
And talk a little bit about, this is right in your wheelhouse from, again, listening to the radio interview the other day. Talk about the horses. Where are the horses going to come from? It sounds like you have a draft coming up. How will that work?
Yeah, from and that's, you know, we're kind of back doing a lot of things from the back forward. Looking at that documentary series, you know, we're trying to create excitement and things to follow. So, yeah, we're going to have a draft just like the NFL and all the other sports have. Going to be the first week of August, but we'll be purchasing these horses privately. We will get into some opportunities where we're actually leasing horses. And, you know, the creativity and the growth of the horse purchasing will be a challenge, but, you know, a good challenge. And we hope to continue to expand and have diversity in our racing. But the bottom line is our job is to create. And I make this comment, and it rubs a lot of the horse people wrong, but remember our focus. Our focus is a wonderful weekend experience at the racetrack. And so we want competitive racing. So, you know, we're using Thoroughgraph, we're using different services to try to make sure we're buying competitive horses. At the end of the day, our races are restricted to our horses. So we want horses in the same class. So we're going to try to make sure we have competitive fields for the gambler and for the fact, you know, for the fan that can be screaming and hollering as the horses come down the stretch. You know, I've had, you know, as time evolves, you know, I listen to people. Well, we try to take advice, but everybody says, well, if you're not going to have championship racing, it won't work. I'm like, it just defeats the whole purpose of what we're doing. We hope to get into championship racing, but the reality of the matter is we want competitive racing. I mean, I'm not a baseball guy. People that know me know I pick on it all the time, but, you know, you have a, what is it, 162-game season, and when you're late in the season, not everybody's playing for this World Series, but as long as we put competitive racing out on the field, on the track, we'll hopefully have good gambling, but most importantly, we'll have excitement. And creating our competition within our own league, that hopefully is what drives fans to really start identifying and rooting for horses and or city teams.
And again, we should make clear, as you said, you're going to play within the parameters of the racetracks you're at, and I heard you say on the radio, your races will be in the tracks condition book. It's just going to be restricted to league horses, as it were. But for folks out there who are watching, who are handicappers and bettors, all these races, you're just going to be able to bet them like a normal race, correct? And talk a little bit about field size and how that shakes out.
Yeah, absolutely. Number one, all the horses that we will purchase will have already raced. I mean, there's, you know, we would love to long-term down the road someday think that we're raising and having yearlings and two-year-olds. But for the start of this year, we'll have 3- and 4-year-olds, maybe 5-year-olds, colts, and mainly colts and geldings because, you know, we have a short season and we want these horses to be racing. But at the end of the day, if you didn't look at the condition and you were just looking at the racing form, you may not know that it's a restricted race because, yeah, it's going to be right with the, we want our three races together just because we're trying to compact in our own little competition and have a celebration of the winner of each weekend. But the races, if they're the first, second, and third, they're just going to be normal. You know, they'll be part of your pick three, pick fours, pick fives. There'll be no difference from that standpoint. The PPs will be just like you've seen it because these are existing racehorses. So from that standpoint, you know, it'll be just very normal. As you said, the only difference is the entries are restricted to the NTL, National Thoroughbred League horses. Field size, it's a challenge first year only because we've been working on this a long time. We had hoped to start. We were going to start at Parks and then go to Monmouth. It's just, you know, my first experience at a startup, and there's just so many things. And booking talent, getting hotel rooms booked, and doing all the things you do has restricted us now to only have 6 or 7 teams. So, you know, that's a negative from the standpoint of grandiose field size, but we plan on having 10 teams in 2024, so you'll have 10 horse fields. But, you know, sadly, this is the one year we'll probably get away with small field sizes as I'm seeing them all around the country nowadays.
Yeah. And, you know, looking at the information that came out last week on the horse racing side, you're going to have Mike Smith and Chantel Sutherland involved, I'm assuming, as kind of ambassadors and whatnot, and Steve Asmus and Chad Correct. Brown are involved as well. But it was notable that you have people coming in from other industries as well, and I think that seems to be a vote of confidence for the horse racing industry.
Yeah, it's actually very exciting. I'll be the first one to tell you, those that know me, I'm a horse guy, so I have to look up some of these people, but that is a big, big push from Bob and Randall. And you're going to continue to read, now that we finally announced, more and more celebrity, athlete-type names, country music, rock and roll people. They're very big on getting partners in, because just like an NFL team or any major league sport, there's the majority owner, or the managing member or owner, but they're syndicated. There's going to be many owners, and that's a very big push that they have. And it's going to help us, because between the influencer world and these celebrities with their followers, we really think we can get an outreach and that's part of our push to get that non-racing community to come out to the track. And I think it's great that they're doing that. I just have to tell you, that's not my bailiwick, so I don't know all about that, but I can tell you there's a lot of interesting names looking at this. It's an investment. You have to buy in. These teams cost money. Obviously, everything costs money. So we have a whole different division that's working that, and I think you're going to continue to see names that are going to help reach new audiences that we're currently not reaching, and that's exciting.
I'm guessing you can buy in for a lot cheaper than an NFL team, though. So I would think.
Yeah. Right now, we're not trading for billions.
So I think it's a fun idea, and I'm excited for you guys, and I'm excited for the horse racing industry, and I'm rooting for you. And things will kick off early September, that Nashville, Kentucky Downs location. And as I say, just reading about it, it sounds like an idea of the TV show tied in with the built-in drama of horse racing. But as you say, then you get to add on the layers of learning experience for new people, which will be part of the events on track as well. I think it bodes well for the racing industry and revitalizing that on-track experience and bringing in new fans. So I'm wishing you and the whole team a lot of luck. I will also alert you if you need any help spreading the word, by all means get in touch. And we broadcast every morning from the Saratoga backstretch when that meet is live. So if you or any of the team is in Saratoga this summer, by all means give us a little heads up and we'll have you come on and give a preview, weeks out from the opening. But Tom, wish you a lot of good luck. And again, I think it's a fun idea.
Well, listen, I appreciate you putting me on the show, and I definitely will be at Saratoga. I never miss it. And I look forward to it, and I hope everybody gives this thing a great chance. It's a real, I think, jolt of energy to our industry, and it would be great.
Yeah, I agree totally. Tom, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks. Tom Lute, again, National Thoroughbred League. And again, you can check out the website for a little more info, ntl.racing. And I think it sounds like a fun idea. And again, it's year one. They'll be working the kinks out and whatnot. But I think it has the potential to catch on and again, bring new fans into the game. And that's what it's all about. All right. I'm going to wrap it up for Racing Across America for this morning. Thanks to Tom for joining us, talking a little bit about the league, and Scott Shapiro earlier taking a look at that stakes action this afternoon at Churchill on what is now, unfortunately, their closing weekend for the meet, but it's a great way to go out with a big stakes day this afternoon. Again, racing there tomorrow before moving to Ellis next week. I'm going to wrap it up. Normally, I would say tune in later this afternoon for OTB Live, but I'm on the road, and I will remind people, if you want to stop by the Rome branch, grand opening of the Rome branch this afternoon. It's a fan appreciation day. I'll be there with Shannon Donovan from the marketing department. Food, vouchers, past performances, contest. It'll be a lot of fun out there, and I'm happy to head out and be able to meet and greet and say thank you to our patrons out there. So if you're out in that direction, definitely swing by this afternoon. Otherwise, I will wrap it up for this morning and invite you to tune back in for Racing Across America tomorrow at 10 a.m. for our usual Sunday recap show, and our usual visit from Tony Kahlo as well from the Finger Lakes. We'll do a little preview of some of the early week action out in upstate New York. Otherwise, thanks again, as always, for tuning in this morning to Racing Across America. I'm Seth Merrill. Appreciate it. And again, we'll see you tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., for the Sunday edition of Racing Across America. We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.